Good evening, everyone. Welcome. Welcome. It is a pleasure to welcome the community to our Young Israel Tshuva Talks series. Tonight's shiur is a tremendous kavod for us to host the Rosh Yeshiva in our shul. It is part of a larger effort within our shul as we embrace Elul and the days of Yomim Noraim. We've had opportunity to have many shiurim and many programs in order to create the context and the framework within which we can introspect and look at ourselves and our lives and begin the process of tshuva, the process of growth, of return, and the ability to lead an inspired and committed Torah life. I want to thank Avrami Grohl for all of his efforts in making tonight possible. We have a tremendous Akar Satov to him. And I want to thank all of those that that assisted in putting tonight's program together. The Rosh Yeshiva's family has had a profound impact on Klal Yisrael for many, many generations and across many continents. But in our personal family, we actually have a very personal connection with the Rosh Yeshiva's family that I'm not even sure he's fully aware of. And that is that my parents, who are here tonight, so my mother grew up in Linden, New Jersey. And in Linden, New Jersey, as she was a teenager, she attended an after-school Talmud Torah. And the primary influence on her at that after-school Talmud Torah in Linden, New Jersey, was Rebbetzin Sheila Feinstein. And to this day, she had a tremendous impact on her growth. And as a result of that sense of influence and that sense of inspiration, she went on to build, Baruch Hashem, a family, all of whose children are involved in Avodas HaKodesh, and one of whom is standing right here tonight. And so it is with tremendous Hakaras HaTov that I personally welcome the Rosh Yeshiva here to our shul. And I share this personal vignette a few nights before Rosh Hashanah because one of the most central ideas of Yemei HaTshuva is the infinite value of a deed, of an action. That what we do has ripple effects to those around us, to our families, to our communities, and also has ripple effects throughout generations. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Tshuva that we have to view ourselves as teetering between Rasha and Tzaddik, that the Gzar Din can go either way. Is this really a realistic caricature of most of us in terms of where we're holding Avodas Hashem? Possibly not. But it reflects a certain attitude that we are supposed to develop, that every action that we do that is forthcoming is meaningful, is impactful, and makes a difference. And that sensitivity allows ourselves to develop a greater sense of commitment to Torah and Mitzvot and to our Avodas Hashem. The Rosh Yeshiva of Reuven Feinstein is someone who has devoted his entire life to the Klal, to being Marbitz Torah, to being Madrich thousands of people and institutions, including one in our own community, the new Beis Yaakov Mechon Ora, which prides itself on its Mora Derech, being Harav Feinstein. And he's someone for whom every action in life is measured with its infinite potential, and has had an incredible influence on thousands of people throughout the world. And so it's so appropriate, and it is such a kavod for us, that as we begin to prepare ourselves for Yom HaDin, that we have the opportunity to hear words of inspiration and of chizuk and hadracha from Harav Reuven Feinstein.
Is it okay over here?
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember it. Obviously, since this series has been going on, Elul, a lot of the stuff I'm going to say probably is repetitive. I just want to start with the basic concept of tshuva from the Rambam and Hilchos Tshuva, give you more of his ideas, what his chiyuvim are, and then to figure out what our chatoyim are, because that's a big problem we have. Most of us don't feel we ever do anything wrong, and we have to figure out if we are, we aren't. And after that, how do we fix those things, or how do we get to that realization? Okay. So, basically, the Rambam starts off, really, it comes in a little bit later in the first period, but it's the idea that there are three types of averus we know. We say it in davening all the time. Chotosi, avisi, pashaiti. Chotosi means I did a shogeg. Shogeg means I didn't learn it or I forgot it. Mazed, the second one, I did it on purpose, but I may have been driven to it. Hachis is I did it in spite, would be called the best way. Because of these three, you have three different types of responses of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On a shayyik, you need slicha. Now, that's what slicha mechila kapor, that's the lotion that you find again in davening. Slicha is an interesting thing. It's in Hebrew, when you guy say slicha, slicha, it means excuse me. And some of the responses usually end of a, nothing. Do anything. Imagine you have to go through a crowd and you're going to push people. But when you push him, you say, excuse me, and you push him. The person, it's okay, don't worry. Right? If you don't say, excuse me, they're going to turn around and punch you. Because where are you going? Who are you pushing? What do you think you're doing here? Right? So the word excuse me is important, in other words. But it's a lesser degree of a chet. So in other words, since somebody yet did not learn it or he forgot it, so it's really not his fault to a certain extent. So therefore, the Beishim says, I know you're trying, slicha. Okay, forget it. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Mazed requires mechila. Mechila already is, I forgive you. I forgive you is, a lot of times you can't say those words. In fact, the Rabbeinu Bechai says the reason that there was the brothers and Yosef never made that peace throughout our history was because Yosef never forgave his brothers. He was never meichel them. What do you mean he wasn't meichel for them? For 17 years, they ate on the same table with their father. They got along fine. What do you mean he wasn't meichel them? Yeah, it's okay. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Say you're meichel. I can't. Meichel means it never happened. I can't say it never happened. Yeah, you're not meichel. Meichel means if someone owed you $100 and he will meichel him, he doesn't owe you anything anymore. It was as if it was paid back. There's no debt. That's mechila. So that's a much higher level in singing. And for lahachis, you need kapore. Kapore means onshim, means whatever it takes to raise the chet. Now, sometimes slicha can be used, and you find it in davening, sometimes for mazid and sometimes for lahachis. The truth is, how do you do something despite HaKadosh Baruch Hu? If you truly believe in God, then you can't spite him. You're automatically afraid of him. So how do you get spite? I don't believe. So in that way you can say, I was silly. I didn't really understand. I didn't know better. Okay, so sometimes God can say, okay, I see that you were a fool, so slicha, it's okay, forget it. Mazid, same thing. Sometimes a person can fight the good battle, as you say, not to do a chet. And sometimes you really can't do much about it. Let's say, for instance, an army won a position. In order to hold on to that position against the counterattacks, you set up sentries. You fall asleep on sentry duty, they shoot you the next morning. There's no forgiveness for that, because you put everybody in danger. Now, if you've been fighting for a couple of days, everybody's very tired. So how do you get volunteers to be sentry duty? So the captain, whoever the officer is, he said, we need 3 volunteers, you. And everybody thanks God they weren't one of those 3 volunteers. Guy falls asleep. I'm going to shoot him the next morning. Does it make it that we say that he was a bad person? Absolutely not. But he still put us all in danger. So they're still going to kill him. And the same thing happens with Amazit. Sometimes I tried not to do the chet. I tried. We all know that the Banshim doesn't give us an assignment, a test, unless we can pass it. But unfortunately, most people give up. And because we give up, but sometimes the Banshim takes that in consideration. Slicha, I saw you tried, you didn't make it, okay. But what happens on Shagig? I didn't learn it. So if you say a person didn't learn something because he was involved learning and getting more knowledge, time, he just didn't get there yet. So then Benjamin says, Slicha. But what happens if the person says, you know, God, I'm really not interested to know what you said. I don't care. So then you need a mechila for that, because that you're a very big insult. So those are the general things. Now, there are 3 parts to tshuva, as that Rambam starts off. They are chavote. I have to be, you're sorry you did it. Kabbalah, I accept I won't do it again. And vidu repeh, I have to say it out loud, what I did. To myself, not necessarily everybody, anyone has to hear. You hide, whatever it is, but there's things that you have to do. Let's understand what that means. Why is Kabbalah, the acceptance not to do it again, part of tshuva? If I didn't do any averus in the first place, I have no right to do an avera. So the fact that I'm not going to do an avera, you're just listening to the Torah. It has nothing to do with tshuva. So when the Rambam puts down that you have to have a Kabbalah, that I'm not going to do it again, why? So this is what I think is the answer. That normally a person, going to McDonald's or not, I can be very hungry, right? But you have the choice. You can or you can't. No one's standing over you with a pop with a gun and stuff like that. You can stop yourself, you can't stop yourself. The first time I approached the chet, I used my willpower. My willpower was not successful. I gave in. So if I'm doing the tshuva, I can't rely on willpower anymore. Because you saw willpower was not enough to stop you from doing the chet. You have to make a siyog. You have to make something to prevent me from getting into that. That's the instance that I always go into McDonald's. I got to make sure to move. I have no choice. Because as long as McDonald's is there, I'm going to have that temptation. And you see, 95% of the time, I'm not going to give in. But you're going to give in the other times. And therefore, you have to do something about that. And therefore, you have to move or something. That's the basic thing what it means. Now there's a din he brings down the Rambam. When does forgiveness take place? So if you do an Esser, I'm not talking about tefillin, which is Shailik, or Pesach, Mila, these things are big ones. But talking about, I didn't like Chishvi Bismana, which is Hazay. So if you do tshuva, just think it, you're forgiven right on the spot. You do a lav, but ones that are not chayv koros or misa, then the din is you need tshuva and Yom Kippur. In other words, until Yom Kippur, I'm not forgiven. I need Yom Kippur. if I do a chomotik alav, which is kares or misa, then I need shuvim, yom kippur, and yisurim. I need some things to happen to me. Now, the yisurim, there are different types of yisurim. I feel that since we're dealing with the death penalty normally, the yisurim that you have to be that type of yisurim. What does that mean? It could be aresh to the shrek. Have you ever heard that expression? Usually your mother's made sense of an expression. In other words, when you're afraid the doctor told you, you know, you got 2 months to live, and then laughs about it because the tech made a mistake, you know. But meanwhile, fertility called you back, you were petrified, right? So you say, aresh to the shrek. In other words, the forgiveness should be the fear itself. Sometimes you crash your car. You see that wall coming up against you, and thank God you walk away without a think. Whatever the case is, but it's a fear that gives you that fear of death for a second, then it passes, thank God. Sometimes that's not enough. Sometimes God will give you something that remains for a while. Sometimes he'll kill you. But that's the tshuva of the thing. So a lot of times when things happen, you do tshuva on Yom Kippur, and it's after Yom Kippur, and now we say it's a good year and everything else. I'm not finished yet until I have Yisurim. But when those Yisurim come, don't feel bad. Say, thank God, now I have a clean slate. Now I'm finished. So those things will come. Only if you have the tshuva. If you didn't do a tshuva, it's not going to happen. And then you're not forgiven. If you have a chilul Hashem, the only kapara is death. So you need everything and death to finally be a kapara. So that we're not talking about. Now, we were talking about that an essay, even though you're forgiven right away by doing tshuva on an essay. In a way, your attitude to the essay may be a lot worse than doing a lav. For instance, you do a lav, there's a war in yourself. Should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? Whatever it is there. You lost. Okay. On the other hand, if the king, let's say, would ask you, get me a cup of coffee, and you go out to get the cup of coffee, and you meet your friend, and you get into a conversation, and you forget about the cup of coffee. That's the biggest chutzpah you can have. I mean, the king asked you for a cup of coffee. How did you forget to bring him a cup of coffee? Right? That's what an essay is. An essay is, I'm asking you to do something for me. And you say, no, I don't want to do it. That's a chutzpah. On the other hand, a lav, which is talking about Yetzer Hara or something. So it depends on my attitude. So if I put up a fight, so I put up a fight. So at least I recognize God, I recognize who he is, and I try my best as well, I think my best, and that the Ben Shalom will forgive easier than the essay. But even though if you do a real tshuva will be immediate. Now, these are all for the averus that we know about, or that we acknowledge our avelis. But there are many avelis that we don't acknowledge even, that we do. And the question is, how do we get to acknowledge it and to see it and feel it? So that's what we'll talk about now. Give you some simple ones that we're talking about. Trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Most people don't have it. In other words, do I feel secure in myself? Or I feel I have to do avelis. I don't worry, I have to worry. The reason I have to worry is because I don't know why God is doing this to me and putting me into this situation. But I want to do avelis to think I'm going to get out of it. For instance, I need money so I can steal. Right? That shows you that, you know, you really, if you believe God can give it to you, and he will give it to you, why are you taking it yourself? You think, try something that's honest. It'll work. if he's going to give it to you. He's not going to give it to you, even if you steal it, it's not going to work. And if it works, because he would have gotten it anyway. Those are the things, that's basic bitochen. And unfortunately, we don't have it. Kavane, when we make a bracha, we make davin shemen esrei. Do we feel we're davening to God? No, I got a davin, I daven. Fall asleep in the middle. Maybe I start thinking about what I have to do, you know, on my way home, or on my way to work, or whatever it is, or at work. And you get it up. So we don't do kavana either. We're careless. Now, careless is, this is what I'm going to elaborate on a little bit, because carelessness, if I would ask you, you know, does anybody ever talk about to you about murder? That you know how to murder. I mean, you all think it's a joke, right? Murder, what do we got to do with murder? Right? Stealing, you got to talk this about. Murder, no one's murder, see? It depends how we translate murder. Does murder mean murder one, which is what we're taught in America? That's the only real murder, premeditated. Or is murder not being careful? Now, we know, if we learn Makis, that a goy, we know there's a thing called, there's Oli Mikot, that are made for killing somebody b'sheigig. Didn't say killing somebody by accident, it said killing somebody b'sheigig. That means a goy doing the same thing, drunk driving, not looking, things of that sort, we would kill a guy. A Jew not, because a Jew has a din of shaydik. He has to go to Golis. But you're a murderer, regardless. You're not a murderer, it's Chayv Misa, but you're a murderer. And what happens if I'm careless and I don't kill anybody? Does that make me less of a murderer than if I would have hurt somebody? Because the only reason you didn't kill anybody is that there was no one chayiv misa when you did what you did. So when you're driving your car and you get involved talking to the person next to you and you just miss somebody, you say, whew, that was close, right? And then I gotta be more careful. Then you start looking like this for the next 5 minutes. You don't kill anybody for the next 5 minutes. You're back to talking to them as if it never happened, right? You're a murderer. You just, thank God, never had to kill anybody. But what you've done, the same caps of mighty, because the only reason you didn't kill anybody because there was no one around to murder. But if there was, you would have killed him. This is in the same thing, whatever it is, you drop something 20 floors down, you're running down the steps and you hit somebody by accident and he had to catch onto the steps and not get, and he doesn't fall because of that, or whatever it is. All it is, it's just you're lucky. Not lucky, I mean, you didn't kill him because he wasn't Chayv Misa, so therefore. But you didn't stop being guilty for being a murderer. So if we would teach people that that's called murder, then people would be more careful. Because they realize, and the reason we're not careful, because we're involved in America, but that's the concept of murder. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Okay, so that's carelessness. Another one that's caused by our culture, as you put it, lying to win. We all know the rules of baseball. Have you, in the history of the world, ever thought, and I assume that there were millions and millions, maybe billions, of runners up to first base, right? Have you ever heard that the runner said, I was out, and the baseman said, you were safe? We're talking about truth here now. Nobody ever happened such a truth that they made a mistake the other way? Or we're taught, my job is to say I'm safe, and your job is to say you're out. And whether it's true or not is irrelevant. And that's what we learn how to do. On something they call Novo Bishus HaTeira, we learn. Someone is a lawyer. I'm not insulting any lawyers here. They're here. But But a lawyer's job is not to teach people how to follow the law. It's how to get out of people, how to get out of following the law. I don't need a lawyer to follow the law. But if I didn't follow the law, I need a lawyer to get me out of it. So the idea of a lawyer is how to not obey the law. The idea of an accountant is how not to pay the taxes. Not how to pay the taxes, it's how to get out of paying the taxes. And if I don't do a good job and be able to save my boss money, I'm not going to have a job anymore. So I've got to find nice new inventions of how to make it done. The Torah, when we learn, is not how to get out of listening to the Torah. We have to learn the Torah is what do we do to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore it's completely the other way. And yet, since it's rules, we're saying, well, technically I can get away with it by doing this and this. So therefore I should have to follow the law, and that goes even for the Torah. We call that another Lishus HaTorah. Then we have Asuda Shenim Stapekis Labaitim. This is one that Rambam himself mentions. That's, let's say, when I went to yeshiva, you get packages from home. And if your mother knows you love a certain cookie, she bakes it for you, and you have, let's say, 100 cookies. And she's not intending to send you another package for 3 months. Got 100 cookies. One a day is going to keep you for 3 months. But I got a package today, and all my friends come in and say, can I have one? Can I have one? Can I have one? And you give them all out. And by the end of the day, you have no cookies left. You're not allowed to ask that person for a cookie. That's called the Suda Shenim Stapekes Labailim. That a person doesn't have enough for himself, and you're putting him into a position to refuse you, that's gezel. Well, it's avad gezel, it's not real gezel, but it's gezel. Let me give you even a little better. Reuven and Gad, right? We know the story. They came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they asked him for Eva Hayadim because they had sheep. The land was good for sheep. If you'll ever take a look at the parasha, there is three parts there. There's a samach after a couple of psukim. There's a samach, which is what they present their case of saying, you know, these cities are good for sheep and we have sheep. And then samach, stop. They keep talking. We found favor in your eyes. Please give us the land. And the then Moshe Rabbeinu bawls them out that you guys are like the Meraglim. You're going to stop the people wanting to cross over the sea. And then they volunteer, we're going to go first. Why didn't he just ask them, you're not going to go fight with your brothers? You let them go by themselves and stuff like that? They would have said the same thing. We'll go. And they had no intention not to go. So why is it presented this way? So there's a Rishami. Talks about Bikurim, which is last week's Sefer. And it says you don't bring Bikurim. The Mishnah says you don't bring Bikurim from Eva Hayadim. So he says, which part of Eva Hayadim? More clear the question. Are we talking about because it says the land that God gave you and Reuven and Gad took the land themselves? And therefore, it should not come, but from Menashe you can bring Bikurim, or because it's not as Chol of a Devosh, and then all three you don't bring it from. Now, I learned the Chumash. It says God gave Reuven and Gad a Chelek and Eva Yadin. Didn't say they took it by themselves. So what does it mean they took by themselves? The Mishnah's teaching is a very interesting thing. If you push your case, that's called you're taking it. When you say, please, 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 the guy's not giving it to you anymore. Because you put him into a position to go against his midas, to say, no, I'm not going to give it to you, and stand on it, and the person doesn't want to do that. And therefore he gives in. And that's called you forced the issue, and you took it. He didn't give it to you, you took it. And it's an avera that we say, well, I didn't take it, I gave it to him. Yeah, he nudged him a long time, he gave it to him. Sinas Chinam. Right? That's what we all talk about all the time, especially the organizations about it and all this thing. I don't know if I'd ask anybody here in this room, do you hate anybody for nothing? You'll tell me, no, I have a perfect good reason why I hate everybody. So, what do you mean, Simas Chinam? So we could go into the Gemara in Pesachim, Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, and it talks about there's only one type of sinner that you're permitted. But you'll say, well, it's not too black and white over there. So I'll give you a Rashi in Shabbos, Amud Beis, Amud Beis, that talks about Sinas Chinam, and he says, all hate is Sinas Chinam, except if you saw somebody doing a Avera and that you can't tell anybody. Let's say you see somebody, the local butcher who's eating kalfas. Can't trust him anymore, right? You can't tell anybody because you're the only one that saw it. And because you're the only one that saw it, it'll be Lashon Hara if you tell it to anybody. But you know the truth. So you yourself can't eat that food. You yourself has to hate the guy, meaning that I don't treat him anymore like a good buddy anymore because he's a guy who's not a good buddy. He's not a good person anymore. Right? But that's the only person I'm allowed to hate. They're talking about Dovah Elvagrad, what the particular Pasuk talks about, but it's the same thing. So why not? Why Taki, isn't it? Why am I... Guy went and he made me lose my job. My wife divorced me. My kids became off the derech. All because he went and they messed up my panos. Right? And you're calling that Sinas Chinam? Right, that's Sinas Chinam. I have a perfectly good reason to hate him. The reason that it's Sinas Chinam is because the reason it happened to you is because God wanted it to happen. There's a pasuk in the beginning of the Devarim that says, Leisakim, tell me, judge how to act, right? You're not allowed to show favoritism, you're not allowed, you have to judge whether it's a big case or a little case, you have to give it the same consideration, you shouldn't be afraid of anybody. Why? Because Mishpat belongs to God. Right? So, if I learned the Pasuk without Rashi, I'd say, Mishpat Lelokim means that it's such a high thing, Mishpat, that you can't play around with it. Rashi says a different thing altogether. Mishpat Lelokim hu, im ato neitos mizeh shalai kidin, if you took from this guy shalai kidin, you're forcing me to give him back the money because I can't cause a loss that he doesn't deserve. So he has to get that money back. So you threw the mishpat on me. And that's not the job. Your job is to do mishpat, not me. And that's why you can't be afraid of these things. If God is doing it, so what does it mean? Why do you have to put the thing on me? God, you know, do whatever you want to the guy. Leave me out of it. He's my friend. I don't want to go have to pass in a case against my friend. I don't want to get involved. No, I want you to get involved. I want you to talk about truth. I want you to talk about what's in. You know, some people, let's say two of your friends had an accident. And each one says, whose fault was it? I don't want to say. I don't want to get involved. Right? Both of my friends. You're going to be even a big avail if they make it a person. You have to testify. Because that's what justice is. You can't get me, I don't want to get involved. That's what you have to do. And therefore, there's such a thing. So therefore, with the Benjamin, we'll give back to what they take it. Same thing will happen. Anybody takes away from somebody, wants to steal from someone. If he didn't, they deserve it to lose it. The guy would have dropped it on the way out. Or they would have caught him and they would have got it back from him. Or whatever it is here. There's different levels because of the thing. So therefore, the fact that it's gone, what these things happen to you, is because God wanted it to happen to you. If it wouldn't happen through him, it would happen through something else. but it was going to happen. I'll give you a mushroom, and so you said, well, I only did it for his motive, not because he actually happened to me. And you're going to start trying to give an excuse to yourself why I'm allowed to hate him, because he wanted to do me bad, so therefore I'm hating him for that, not because he actually did the bad to me. So let's see if that's true. You ever remember these very big fans for air conditioning and stuff? They have, normally it's 20-inch fan, but there's about a 30 or 40-inch blade. They're about 10 feet high, not more. And they had these tremendously big blades, and when they blew, they blew. You actually felt the wind coming out. Okay. So let's say a guy comes over to you and wants to throw a glass of water in your face. If he would throw it in your face, you'd be very embarrassed. Right? First of all, the fact that someone did it to you, and secondly, you'd be dripping wet, and you would be looking funny, whatever it is, so you'd be very upset about it. But the funny part is, when you threw it in his face, the fan swerved right at that spot and it blew the water back into the guy who threw it in his face. So then everybody laughs at the guy. You know, you wanted to harm somebody else and you got harmed yourself, right? And then the guy says, please forgive me. So you're still laughing, so you say, sure, no problem. But if he hit you in the face, you wouldn't say, sure. He says, please forgive me. You're not going to say, sure. So obviously it's because you got wet, not because he wanted to wet you. And you'll say, but what happened if he wouldn't do it so I wouldn't have gotten wet? No, you would have walked and tripped and fallen head face first into a puddle of water and you had the same problem. Not big difference how you did the water on your face. If that's what God wanted, you to look like a fool, that's what's going to happen. Doesn't make a difference. So he didn't really do anything to you. It's just that he became the shliach doing what was supposed to happen to you. So for that, you have no right to hate him. And that's the point that the Torah is telling you. Because everything is sinasim. Now, there's a Gemara that says if someone has bad things happening to him and he doesn't know why, so he said mefashpish b'maisa, he should check into his actions. So the Gemara then says pishpish v'lemosa motza, he checked into his actions and he didn't find that he did anything wrong. It's tolu b'pitul teri, that you say that the tenadil teri. Now, well, you know, there's a lot of kashis, but it's not Naveira, this and that, you know. And the thing, it's also Naveira, yeah. But it meant to say that, so the normal of the Lempshat means, in Bittul Teira, you know, there's a Rishon Salanta, they asked him, if someone has only half hour to learn, what should he learn? Say, he should learn Musa. Why? Because when he learns Musa for the half hour, find out he has more than a half hour to learn. Yeah, that's the idea. In other words, you think you have no time. But if you would actually allocate it, you'll find that there are plenty of time during the day that you're wasting. So that's a simple way to learn pshat. They say the goyim used to actually keep a cheshbon on that. He landed up, I don't know, at 17 minutes at the end of the year or something like that, you know, and something, whatever a number it was, you know. But he himself gives a different pshat. He says what it means is totally bittul teira, meaning the reason you don't know it's an aveira is because you didn't learn. If you should have learned, and you would have known it's an aveira, but you didn't learn, that's why it's happening to you, to get you to learn, to get you to understand that you're doing an aveira. Now, there are many things that can go and we'll go into the, maybe go back to that part. The biggest thing I told you was about, we live in America, we have certain ideas because of America. When we went out of Mitzrayim, most men say it every day, parshas of Kaddish, by Tefillin. So it says, He gives the system, six steps of how to make your children to be good. He goes in there. So one of them, the first one is, remember the day you left Mitzrayim. Didn't say remember the day you became free. It says remember the day you left Mitzrayim. We became free, just as a point of information, on Rosh Hashanah. 6.5 months before we went out of Mitzrayim, we were free. If I didn't learn Gemara Rosh Hashanah, I wouldn't know it. Right? Because no one talks about it. What they do, remember the day we went out of Mitzrayim. Why do we remember that day more than the day we became free? Because the day we went out of Mitzrayim, we threw away the culture of Mitzrayim. Until then, we were influenced by them. And you see how many Jews actually came out of Mitzrayim. Only Chamushim. At the maximum of that is 20%. The minimum, or the non-acceptable one sheet that was 1 in 600,000, is 0.002%. That's how many Jews died. Hitler didn't do such a good job. And we call that a gula. That's the part we have to remember, because we can't start a nation with people who have the wrong ideas. And the Rebbeinu Shlom, you know, we say in Shemin Esrei, Kibbutz Kol Yisrael, Kapi Shefa Gadol Chiruseinu. I don't know how we imagine that taking place. We're going to be on the internet, going to have a big microphone, going to have the big Shefa. I have no idea how it's going to happen. But if we look in reality, Kibbutz Kol Yisrael has been taking place probably from the mid-1800s. When they actually, I'm talking about when the Hasidic and Talmidei Agora came up, which was in the early 1800s. But in the late 1800s, when the Zionists went up and made the first kibbutzim, I think it was about 1880, around there, that's when you had started the first Aliyah, as they call it. And at that time, when the state started, I think there was only about 650,000 Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Russia way outpopulated them, the United States for sure. I don't think there's any country in the world except the United States at the moment that has more than 1 million Jews in it, except Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael now has 10,800,000 Jews. So that means the biggest concentration is there. How did it become there? Well, a little bit started after the First World War, more people came there when all the countries fell apart. After the Second World War, for sure. Right? And then now France, others, right? How does God get us to leave? All the Arab countries in 48, the Arab countries. By making us persecuted, that we don't have anything to do with them. You know, after the war, the Second World War, there were many people that would not buy anything made in Germany. Why not? It's the best stuff you can get. It's the best car, it's the best engineered stuff. It's this thing there. Because it comes from Germany, and I won't take anything that comes from Germany. So by hating them, you reject their whole culture and everything else that's presented by them. I'm sure the people that left France now can't tell you, so no one's going to go buy French styles anymore. I'll get some other thing to buy. Because I don't like France. I hate France. We even see a little bit funny in America, when we had that disagreement with France, we called them American fries instead of French fries. It was a joke, but it wasn't funny. They did not call it French fries. They wouldn't call it. Sounds silly, but that's what they did. We'd have want nothing to do with those countries. And that's what God has done to us. He's made us not want to have anything to do with those countries. And mainly, how do you do it? By forcing us out from those countries. And as I say, you'll say, so what's wrong being an American? So I gave you before what's wrong. In other words, our concepts of murder, our concept of to win, all that counts is winning, not playing the game. And law, these are things that we can, and there may be more, may not be. So far, God is tolerant of us. But if you got intolerant, it's very fair, then we get kicked out of here too. You guys don't remember, most of you are not even young enough, old enough to remember. In 67, there's a question whether it came out in 67 or 73, but I remember in 67. So they could have reprinted it again in 73 with the Yom Kippur War. The America was affected. Why? Because the oil became expensive, gas became expensive. There were certain other embargoes that there was. People hated Jews anyway. Whatever the reason is, it didn't make a difference. A guy wrote a poem that was brought up in different state legislatures, mainly the South and the West. Of course, they didn't have that many Jews there. Tremendously anti-Semitic, that we should kick the Jews out. And this guy wrote a poem, a story, whatever you want to call it, saying, on your way out, honk your horn and I'll join you. You did this for me. You cured polio. That was obviously one of the big things. And he went through a whole bunch of things that Jews have done for the world and says, therefore, I'm going with you, as they throw you out. So it was a very serious situation. It never came to pass because, thank God, God still wants us here. But again, when Solo escaped to Eretz Yisrael, you guys remember that, and he was one of the guy who was arrested as a spy for Russia, for atomic spy, put in jail. He escaped, went to Israel because there's no law of return in Israel. Israel has a law, they will not give over a Jew to any other country. Be punished. It's been modified and things for now, but basically that's the rule of what. There has to be one place in the world where Yid can be secure. So he ran there. But again, the talk was, Jews have dual loyalties. Jews have this, kick them out. We don't want them here anymore. So he came back by himself. Went back to jail. Stuff like that. The idea is that we're only guests in this country. We may think we're citizens. We may think we're above everybody else. But we're only guests here. We're still in Gullus. Now, you think about it, the Torah was given, Vayichan Yisrael Neged Aho. So Rashi says it means, Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. Everybody was awaiting the Torah as one. Who's included in that everybody? Moshe and Aaron. Nadav and Aviram. Korach, the Meraglim. All of these people are awaiting the Torah. What went wrong? How come they did Averus right away? The others went on to become good. Because people had ideas in their minds before they had the Torah. And when those ideas were challenged by the Torah, they didn't accept certain things. And that's what happened. When I was in school, I remember the teachers we had were mostly Freie Yidden. Yeah. And whenever they get to talk about Chazer, they still didn't eat Chazer themselves. And they would say, the reason we don't eat Chazer is because it has trichinosis. And therefore, we don't need Chazer. Cook it a little more, you don't have trichinosis anymore. White fish also has trichinosis, so what are you going to tell me? That's why I don't eat the chazer. But they couldn't accept it themselves for the reason because God said so. That they couldn't, and we'll get to about that God said so in a minute also. But that they couldn't accept. So they had an idea that Chazal were way behind in science. Okay, the Torah was way behind in science. The Torah doesn't know what exists in the world. And the Torah is written by God. So if he don't know what's in the world, we got a big problem, right? So obviously the Torah is emes. What were the kashas that we say science had? And I'm talking about former scientists now. I'm talking about even prior scientists. I remember the first thing they used to make fun of was the alchemists. The alchemists believed there were four basic elements: earth, fire, water, air. I remember asking, I don't know what class I was in, you know, elementary school. And the teacher taught and made fun of how stupid the people were originally, and now we have, look at our atomic table, you know. And I would say, you know, I don't understand. I'm sure that they themselves knew there are different types of earth. There's lead, there's stone, there's sand, there's iron, there's nechashis, it says on the Torah, meferish.
I mean, it talks about, we all know the different contents of it, so they knew they're different. So how can you say it's all one thing? And they knew in certain air, you'll die because there's no oxygen in there. And certainly you'll live. Same thing, liquids. Certain ones will give you life, and acids and this will burn your kishkas out. Right? So they all knew that there's differences. How could they say that they thought it was all one thing? It didn't make any sense to me. And then I asked the simplest question, what does Eish mean altogether? You don't have anything on your atomic table for fire. Right? Instead of giving the alchemists the chokhmah that they knew the difference between lead and gold was one atom, right? That's why they were always trying to knock lead out and to become gold, because all you have to do is knock one off and it turns into gold. So they knew there's a difference, and they have seen it happen with the atomic explosions, that it actually changed through all the elements, goes right through them. So you see it actually happening, because they're all disappearing, they blow up, right? So what does it mean? I have no idea. But I just wasn't about to them, because that's what Kudlu people. Another one. I don't know where the translation's going, so you know, I'm not going to argue with you about these things. But because there are already different scientific books already written by the former scientists, you know, they say there are four kosher, there's really nine kosher animals, but four hoofed animals that are teif. Right? The camel, the aneris, and the shofar, whatever they mean, and the chazer who is hoofed, who's split hoofed, but he doesn't choose cut, right? Why the Torah repeats it? Once these are the ones like this, and this is the one by fish, it doesn't repeat anything. Just as if you have snap of a kaskes, it's kosher. You don't have it, it's slave. Same thing over here. You don't eat your cut and have split hoofs, it's slave. What do you have to repeat it for? I haven't got the answers for that. But, yeah. Think about it. So some of the translation of an anevis is a hare. A hare is a jackrabbit or a rabbit, a big rabbit, a rabbit. A rabbit has paws, doesn't have hoofs. Right? So if you go into that, probably every animal that's not carnivorous, that doesn't eat meat, probably chews its cud and doesn't have a split hoof. Because they have to run. They have to be able to get to eat the food and take it with them and digest it wherever they get into their lair. That's the reason that they have that double thing. Because they can't fight for their lives. They can't fight the lion and the tiger and all the other animals. So it's forced to have this thing. So you have many animals that chew their cud but have no split hoofs. Right? And that the guy actually wrote a book about that. And
Takin says that the Torah doesn't really know what it's talking about. And what do you mean, Torah? The Gemara even tells you better if I can recognize the animals and I haven't got the hoofs, I can still eat them. Because the thing there. So how can you tell me that it's totally in this thing? The actual thing, if you look in the Pasuk in Shmini, you'll find that the Pasuk for not eating Hilech al Arba is a different Pasuk than this one. Called Hilech al Arba, anything that works on 4 feet, you're not allowed to eat. Tomei Urochem. That's talking about cats and dogs and everything else. But hoofed animals are the only ones we can eat. And of the hoofed animals, there are four that we can't eat. And those four, so some to avoid this, don't ask me how they got the translations. I don't know how people made translations from way back, since it was, as you call Hebrew, was a dead language for many years. How do you know how to translate it towards English? But basically, they translate it as the dromedary. That's the one-humped camel. The Bactrian as the two-humped camel. And the llama, which all of them have hoofs, all have look like they have split hoofs. If you pick up the llama's foot, you go to a petting zoo, and you pick up the llama's foot, you'll see that the part that's under the foot itself, which is about less than an inch, is not split. The front, the stuff that's in front of the foot, that's split. Pick up the goat's foot, and you'll see that the split, even the part under the foot, is split. That's the difference in the thing over there. So you have it before. Now why you translate it one way over the other way, I can't answer you. There are books already written like that. So the question is, they had a question. And instead of trying to find an answer to the question, it's wrong. Another one, spontaneous generation. Right? That's one of the big things that we have, bugs in the vegetables, right? A lot of them is, you ever have a box of matzah milk and you leave it sometimes in a warm place and you come back and you put it out and it's full of bugs and worms. Why is that? That's spontaneous generation. When you put the box in the closet in the first place, there wasn't any bugs in it. Where did the bugs come from? Right? They come from the air. So science has proved there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. So the theory is wrong. Okay, because there's different laws. So no, the Torah is right. Just have to look for a solution. The Torah means this. There are two isurim that happen. One isur is I know I can see the bug from the time it's born. So when the time it's born, I know where it came from. I know it's treif, so it's always treif. There are some bugs that are not visible to the naked eye. If when we breathe, we're breathing in live bugs. We don't see them. They should be also, but the reason the Torah, we can't be responsible for anything under 2020. So therefore, we eat them. So if we don't see bugs, we expected it. There are no bugs there. Even though in a day or two, they would have become visible. Right now, there's nothing there. I don't have to take a microscope and go take a look and see if there's bugs. So that's the din on those bugs. So when do they become osa? After they're born, right? They only become born when they become osa when they're visible. They have two different laws. Some are osa all the time, and some is only in Rechav Alorets that it becomes osa. And that's what it means by there's two different, comes from the air. The Issa comes from the air. It only becomes now in the middle of nowhere. Nowhere. It becomes this. Okay. Then, who's up? A few minutes? Okay. I'll try to just give you the things that you have to get to. Okay. How do you get a little bit betochen? I give you, let's say, an etzer. Let's say everybody needs money or other types of solutions. Money usually is able to solve all problems. Right? And I got a friend that's a trillionaire, okay? And I tell anybody I got a problem, I tell you, I got a friend, he's willing, I can get you a 5-minute appointment with the guy. And in those 5 minutes, you can convince him you need something, you got it. How many hours would you spend to figure out what to say in those 5 minutes? Right? Because everything depends on those 5 minutes. The Anshe Knesset HaGedolah did us a big favor. They set up Shemnesre that these are the words you say. Now, God gives you 3 5-minute appointments a day. All you got to do is convince him that you're serious. How can you not have kavana? Why at least not give it a shot? Maybe it'll work. Huh? You don't even think about it. My father had a psak for women. You know, it's over with a base yankivs to a certain extent, is they're usually made by men. You put in women to run it, but they're usually made by men. And therefore the laws that are given for them are the same laws they give for men. So they tell you how to daven, right? They tell you to daven. You should just say Bar Shama, maybe Ashri Shtabach, Krishna in the Brochus, Shmanesri. Then you go. Okay. A woman is though, she was one of our cable wives, because she had 4 kids. She had to get ready for work. She had to make lunches. Had to get ready, and she had to get there in time. And it's a winter. What can she skip? And he says, skip Krishma in the Bachas, because you're not chayiv in Krishma. But say Psukim de Zimra. Because what is Psukim de Zimra? Your son comes in the freie schools. They say, we don't like a God that wants to be praised all the time. Hallelujah, right? I mean, besides being stupid, nobody answers them. The truth is, we're not praising God. Yeah? With using David HaMelech, how he expressed himself in Tilim as a point of poetry to express what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does in this world. And by knowing that, I know how great God is. So it's important you say Psukei de Zimra first, because then you can believe that God can do it. And once you believe God can do it, now you can pray. But if you don't believe God can do it, then you're not going to daven. You may say the words, but you're not davening. So the first thing you have to believe that God can do it, and that's what Psukei de Zimra is for. For you to understand that. Okay. I want to give you how do we change. Okay, we figured out ways to figure out what we're doing wrong and the thing there, and how do we change. Okay, wanted to start davening kavana. Okay, good. And so Rashi in Parashas Bechukos says a very interesting thing. He says, in Bechukos says, Elechu mitzvei satishmo vasisa mason. So the Rashi says, this is what the words are. You think this means kiyam ha-mitzvahs? It says already, oh, mitzvei satishmo. So it already says mitzvah, you have to do the mitzvahs. Tishmo doesn't mean doing the mitzvahs. Tishmeru, according to Gemara in Kedushin and Rashi, both in Eschan and in Re'ei, means to learn. So why you say it means to do? Why not say Vasisa Moisam? It's the next word. Just say it. It says Vasisa Moisam. So you see from Rashi that the real doing is not the actual Maisa that you're doing. It's learning how to do it in a way. And therefore experience, and I'll go about why I'm saying these words, experience it, the way of doing it, for you to grow. I don't have to do the mitzvahs. I have to learn it as if I'm going to do the mitzvahs. And then it enters me. And Rashi Rei says, you have to learn the mitzvahs until it becomes internalized. That's what the person and the purpose of the mitzvahs are. And that's why that's the biggest doing. You change when you learn the mitzvahs that way. So therefore, that's the first thing you have to do. I also have to learn and understand that we have to, you know, as I say, do we know if we're really trusting God or not? We know if we're honest or not? How are you going to know? If you're tested, it's the only way you're going to know. You can think you're honest, but the situation then arises. And there's always a stronger situation, a bigger situation. But if I learn the mitzvahs, Rashi says in Hazinu, next week, right? There was Hazinu, it says over there, I want my words to come into I want my words to come into you. Tizal katalim wasi. And Rashi said, why did he pick on two lishanis, tau and motto? Because not everybody's happy with rain. But you're happy with, everybody's happy with dew. I know you guys go to the country, not probably out here, you have the same problem. You have a lawn. You have a beauty, you just put on your Shabbos suit. And you're going out to, you just polished your shoes. And you're going in and you're going through the grass. And it's the, just right after the dawn, after the dew is on the grass. Your shine is gone. Your pants are lost its grease. So what do you mean I'm happy with it? Right? But a lot happier, they're getting soaked and losing, and getting real soaked, right? Still wearable. So when you're talking about how ideal for your life, the life is, make it treat you like tau. Now don't make it like mother. Do things the way God wants you to do it. Then he'll give it, so even when things go wrong, because I'm not perfect and sometimes I deserve ancient, it'll be like tau. But if you do it for your motives and so on, and then you have situations, then all of a sudden you have problems, motto, all of a sudden. And then it says, Tizal katal imrosi kisirim aleideshe. I went like the strong winds, according to Rashi's Taish, on grass. Kiravivim aleyesev. Also like this. So kiravivim aleyesev means the rain comes with drops. They come, one drop hits one leaf, another drop hits another leaf. In other words, the drops of the Torah that each person needs should hit him what he needs. That's one thing. And the first one, Kisirim Aleideshi, should have like storms on grass, which makes them strong. If you notice that all the wheat states, every week they have the tornadoes. Why do they have tornadoes? Because you need them. It makes the grass strong. That means, my word, by learning Torah, you should become stronger. That means you shouldn't need the situations of life to make you strong. The learning itself should make you strong. Now, how does that do it? Because when you really truly learn it, you imagine yourself in the situations, which ones you can do, which ones you can't do, which ones are practical, which ones are not practical. And that's how you become strong yourself. That's one thing. Secondly, Bikurim. There's two sefris on Bikurim. One says, do a mitzvah, that because of it, you'll get into Eretz Yisrael. That's the Lashon when it says, Kisavoyu al Haaretz, that's what it means. And then it says, V'yarishto v'yashavto, for the schus of wanting to inherit it, you're going to stay there, v'yashavto. What does that mean? The purpose of Bikurim, interestingly, is to make you realize the land does not belong to you. It belongs to God. And therefore, the only one that's valuable, the first fruits, if you ever walk into a retail store, you have the 20 on the wall, because that's the first money I made, right, in this store, right? That's what they have. Why is it choshev? To me, it's 20 bucks, that's all it is. I trade it for this 20, for a different 20. The owner, it's that 20 that makes a difference. The owner makes a difference, the first fruits. In fact, the first fruit's not even that good. Usually they're not sweet, like the later fruits, right? And yet those are the ones we want, that God wants. I want you to give me the stuff that the owner wants. And since you're giving it to me and you're ready to accept the land on that condition that you realize it's not yours, you can stay there too. And that's what it means, Bereishis Shana V'Rachis Shana. God is always judging it because I want to be there. I want to be in Eretz Yisrael. So that's one thing. Then the chukim. There are three types of chukim. It's a very funny thing. Chayk means we have no understanding of why God gave it, right? So it says a funny pasuk in Ashkhanam. It says, Shmartim v'asisim, you should do, ki hi chokhmaschan v'inaschim le'inam, and this is what makes you considered smart in the eyes of the world. Asher yishmu is kol achukim ha'ela. They hear all these chukim, these mitzvahs that have no meaning, no reasoning. The omru, when they'll say, rak am chochem v'noven ha'goy ha'god lazeh, how great these people are, how smart they are. Does that make any sense to you? So the Tshuva Sarana that he asked that question, and he put it as a question of, to explain it as a medical situation. With me, if let's say a guy has migraine headaches, suffering for years, finally goes to a doctor, and the doctor says to him, you know, did you ever try aspirin? Never tried aspirin. He said, why don't you take a couple, let me know what happens. And he finds it worked. Is he to go give a yeshikeh to the doctor? What a genius the doctor is. No big deal. Everybody knew that. That's my kids told me the same thing. What happened? The doctor would tell you, you know, stand on your head for 5 minutes. And I can't tell you, drink a glass of water. I don't know how you're drinking. Keep it down. But anyway, but just stand on your head for 5 minutes and that'll cure you. And it worked. What do you say? What a genius. He knows the body so well that he can tell you something that sounds so stupid and it works, right? That's what Torah is telling me. We built the curl houses by us. So the people that put in the sod, the Mexicans generally, they may work for Jews, but the Mexicans, the workers. They happen to be religious people and they also are family oriented. So When the day they were leaving, one guy comes over to one of the younger lads and he asks him a question. He says, I have 4 kids and they're always at each other's throats. I've been here for 2 weeks. I see over 100 kids running around. I never saw one fight. What is it that you do? That's what he's asking. He saw the chokhmah, the Torah. What are you going to tell him? How are you going to answer that question? That's a fact. You have 3 types of chukim. One is a paraduma, I'll make it as short as possible. One is a paraduma, right? And he said that God, the Umm Yisrael made fun of the Jews. What's the reason this mitzvah and stuff like that? Let me ask you something. If everyone has a fight with his wife, what does he do to please her? Because of flowers. Now I can bring it from the grocery, from the drugstore or whatever it is there, $10 a dozen, right? Or I can go to a florist and make sure they last for a week at least. They don't droop as soon as you put them into the vase. And they'll be nice. And she'll have flowers. I go to the florist and I pay $50, $100 for flowers. And she, first thing she comes in, oh, thank you, it's so beautiful, and this and that. She puts it in the vase. And where does she put it? Probably on the dining room table. The last time we eat on the dining room table is Shabbos or Yom Tov, normally we're in the kitchen. I don't see it the whole time. The only time you ever see the flowers, if you happen to walk into the dining room for 2 minutes, you may see it. It may please you with those 2 minutes. Then we all sit down, Shabbos and Tish, the table, the beautiful flowers on the table, but we can't see each other. So you say, take the flowers off so we can see each other and talk, right? Why did you waste $50 for nothing? Where's the enjoyment of it? And Goyim understand this too. So they understand. So how do you show love with that? I'm showing you that I'm willing to waste money to put a smile on your face. That's what I'm willing to do. And that itself shows love. So we want to show God we love him. We want to pay for paradoma. What's the guy say? So anyway, the reason that they make fun of us, according to me, would be because you have to buy it from a goy on the first day it's born. And it's not good for use for 2-3 years. So therefore, in those 2-3 years, what was the last blonde kid you had, still a blonde, so you would know what the problem is with a paraduma. Okay? So therefore, why are you wasting all that money? That's one. Then there's a paraduma, so that would teach you Ahavas Hashem. Every time you would do a mitzvah that somehow you're spending money for, think about it. Why am I doing this? Because I love God. Then you have, Chazal and Shatnas. Says, well, the Goyim make fun of us a different way. They don't make fun of us. They answer us. They say to us like this, you believe in God? Of course we say. Said, God made one animal in the world that's totally edible. What do you mean totally edible? You can make ribbons from it. You can make bechah from it. You can make kishki from it. By us, we need three different animals for those things. You've got a good kachai, you need a field's foot, a calf's foot. We want to make a kishki, you need a behemoth, a kishki. We know he has a plastic, but once upon a time, you have a kishki. And ribbonish, you need chicken. A chazi, you do it all from the chazi. You eat the chazi, it's totally edible. So obviously, God made it to eat. So why don't you eat it? Because God said no. Right? Shatness, when you take a look at suits for kids, 35% wool and 65-85% whatever percentage, Dacron, well, or some kind of polyester product over there to keep it strong. Normally you just put in linen, do the job. Why don't you do it? God said no. Same thing for the Eitz Hadas. When other Marishim looked at the Eitz Hadas, it looks good food. Why don't you eat it? Because God said no. So I believe in God. I believe God owns the world. He's the one that made the world. And therefore he can make the rules. So I follow the rules. Then there's a third thing that you have by the beginning of A. It talks about coming to touch your soil and conquering the land. You have to destroy all the other desire in this thing there. And it's called the Chukim. Mishpotim and Chukim. Because of both names. And that's the only mitzvah there. So why is a chayik? You understand. You have to destroy every desire because people shouldn't be nechshel in it. Now, sometimes I can find one, let's say, a getchke, an idol that, let's say, weighs a ton, and it's solid gold. And it's full of diamonds, top to bottom. All the other jewels you can think of are there. This thing is worth billions. If you sell it at Sotheby's to a museum that they'll pay up. This is 4,000 years old. This is something great, right? The guy says, you know, but we can support all the yeshivas in the world for about 5 years with this. Why do we destroy it? Why is it worthless? Because God said so. And God said, don't worry about the yeshivas. I'll take care of them. Shabbos, come in. I can't make panosa. Yontif, I can't make panosa. I'll take care of it. That's what the Rambam said. The people that couldn't hold out during the 20s and 30s and 40s, so Taka, their families, look at them. The ones that held out, different kinds of families. Right? So it's a big difference. That's what the Torah is trying to teach us. So when you do that, you should always remember B'tochen HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I have to trust in God, because without that, how do I do these mitzvahs? Shemitah and whatever will come up. Davening is one other thing that you have to know in davening. I can't put play God. It's a pasuk about davening that says that in Parshas Vayelech, I'm going to have it this week in the Seder. It says over there that they're going to do Avodah Zarah, and I'm going to bring big troubles to the Klal Yisrael because of it. And they're going to say the reason we're having all these troubles because in Hashem, God is not among us. And I won't listen to them. I'll turn my face away from them. And after Kisvili is Hashir Azais, right? Right, Hazinu. What's the answer to the story? Then we learn from the story of the Gemara. Megillah says, "Esther menatayla menayin." How do you know Esther is going to exist? Hastar Esther panai, which is, I will hide my face. Over there, he didn't hide his face. He came. God saved us. So what does it mean? It means if I say God's over there, he's not among us, I'm not helping you. If you don't understand I'm here now, I'm not helping you because you don't recognize me. But I'm here. Then we can talk. But if you think he's over there, nothing to talk about. I'm not helping you. I just want to give you one more so for something we say every day, God is one. What does that mean? We're manifest, right? Great. What does it mean? I want to give you a new way of thinking about it. That God is infinite. That means there's no room for number two. We are totally under his control. There's no end to him. Wherever we go, whatever we do, we're under God's control.
That's my God. Once you have two gods, then there's a way of getting in the middle. And I get away from it, things. So one God, there's no way to get away with anything. Yetzer Hashem, once you realize this, we'll be able to achieve it. Yetzer Hashem, Ben Shem, should be capable and give us a good year and have nachas for our kids. And also tell you that you should be shoes, and absolutely Mashiach, but it came along.
Thank you.
Good, good work, guy. So,
sorry, you don't know the problem.
Thank you.
My Lord Hashem, Leila mi kovr chasav shiro sa tushu chasav nechom asa dam niran bi almavim ramei. تلاویز که داشت میره با نمادی برای خیلی سید همدک محفوظه به خیلی خانو بیامه خانو به خیلی خوب بیسی سرال و لابی زمان که بیدیم با نین ایش میره هم برای خیلی لام با میل مایی آیز برای خیلی اشتا با خیلی سوار بیس من بیس نسه ویسا در ویسا در ویسا و آش میره کچه برای خو بیل همی که برای خواست و شراسا توش خواست برای خواست درم بیام آدم رو آمین کس که باز سلسان و سلسان به خوب بیسی سرال که دم آبان دوش ما ایبیم رو آمین ایش هم رابی من شما ایبا خیم علی نفا خواهی سرال بیم رو آمین Shalom, 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 بنامار بیاد نام خواه کل ارائت خویم و بیاد نام خواهد و شما را خواهد بیسکده ויהיה מקום וחסה ושיר עצה, כשחסה ונחם עצה, כנראה ויאמר אבינו אמן. יהיה שם רב מן שמה היה בחיים אמן, ואחרי ישראל אבינו אמן. ועושה שלום ונחם רב, ויעשה שלום רב, ואחרי ישראל אבינו אמן. ודיאב ידעו שם. חזק ימי סידך וקבל אדוני. יסקדל ויסקדל שמי רב למה. דיומה דבר חילוסי, דמות מחוסי. וחי יפענו ביומי חמי וחי דחו ביס יוסר. ועדה בזמן קריבים ועמי. יסקדל ויסקדל שמי רב למה. יסקדל ויסקדל וישבח ויסקדל ויסמם ויסנסי. ויסדל ויסלה ויסלה שמי לקושר ורחלו. ואילה מקור ורחסה ושיר עשה.
Thank you.